So there's probably been avalanches in Juneau since like the beginning of time, or at least since there were mountains here, and certainly before there were people here. But where should we start this story? Like, what's the earliest date we have for maybe a big avalanche in Juneau?
When Juneau was strictly a mining town, avalanches were part of everyday life, to the point where the old flumes were built as cheaply as possible because they just expected they'd get taken out by avalanches now and then. But the first big avalanche that we know of on the Barron's Path, and for a long time, nobody lived below the Barron's Path, so the records are not great. But the first we know of was in 1890. And that one is still the largest known avalanche on that path. It ran all the way down to the water, where the small boat harbor is now. And it left hundreds of tons of snow on what's now Glacier Avenue. So it was a huge, huge slide. And it was remarkable enough at the time that somebody went to the trouble of going out to photograph the aftermath, which in 1890 would have been a whole thing. And that photograph showed hundreds of tons of snow on the road. And we know about this because the photo was still bouncing around in the 1940s. Somebody with the USGS saw the photo and described it in writing. But nobody knows where that photo is now. And that's a real loss for our knowledge of the avalanche history.
So there was a description of...
Yeah, there was a description of the avalanche. I think it may have been written on the photo itself. And the USGS person was shown the photo by somebody who worked at the AJ mine, and he thought it was important for understanding the hazard. So that's talked about in the first reports that came out, but by the time in the late 60s when reports on the avalanche hazard are coming out, the photo's been lost.
So that's, you know, I mean, that's 1890. Maybe in our timeline, we skip ahead now to, like, when does Juneau decide it's a good idea to start, or decide that it's an idea to start building at the bottom of the avalanche path?
So the neighborhood that wound up in the avalanche path was just an extension of the Highlands neighborhood, which had been growing up for some time as Juneau grew. And then in the mid-late 1940s, just a few homes kind of creep out into the avalanche path down on Glacier Ave, but nothing like what would come later. And then a really curious thing happens, which is that in 1949, the city council had really a bitter argument that spilled over into the press with the school district. The school district wanted to put an elementary school down in the path about where the Breakwater Inn is now. And the city put its foot down. It said, this is a possible slide area. You can't build a school there. And the city prevailed. They didn't put a school there. And then just a few months later, the same city council, same people, voted unanimously to annex that same area to make it part of Juneau. And the area they annexed included the blocks of Barron's Ave and Glacier Ave that are in the avalanche path. And then by annexing, they kind of opened themselves up to providing services, sewer went in and that kind of thing. And after that annexation in 1949, the neighborhood grows really quickly. Many of the homes were built in 1950.
So for whatever reason, they decided not to put a school there, but maybe we don't know the full reason why they decided to put a neighborhood there, except that, you know, Juneau was growing, right? Like it needed the space.
Juneau was growing. The housing shortage was acute. And unfortunately, I have not found much discussion about whether or not it was wise to put houses there or not. It's possible it was a question of attitudes at the time. People just, you know, feeling that people had the right to make their own decisions about risk. But we also know that people who moved in didn't necessarily have the same perception of the risk that the city did. It's hard to unravel exactly why people felt that was a good and a safe place to build.
But by the end of the 1950s, there were houses there. All the houses, I think, that were going to be there pretty much were there. And then in 1962, we have a another very large avalanche in that area. That one's a little bit better documented. The photos are not lost to history. So can you describe what happened in that avalanche?
Well, it was early in the morning and most people were asleep. And from the descriptions, it was extremely disorienting. People didn't understand it to be an avalanche at first. The wind had been blowing hard all night long. And all of a sudden, there was a huge blast of wind and people's roofs were coming off their houses. Several houses lost their roofs. Big tree trunks that had been sheared off went through people's houses. People's had walls collapse. Chimneys came apart. There's stories of chimneys being blown apart on barrens and the chimney stones being thrown through roofs down on glacier. And amazingly, only one person was hurt, although a lot of homes were filled with packed snow and broken glass. Just a very sudden, disorienting event. And this was not anywhere close to a worst-case avalanche for the path. The main part of the avalanche, the dense snow part, actually stopped short of the neighborhood. And what had hit them was this very powerful blast of wind and powder. And after it happened, people still seemed to think of it as a freak occurrence and used the phrase freak wind. And people's insurance actually covered it as wind damage.
Wow. That's the most damaging avalanche that's been there, because the houses haven't been there that long in, you know, geological terms, I guess. But that, I think, maybe scared some people or definitely created the need to figure out what the risk was there. So they start some studies like right after that.
Yeah. So the neighborhood was rebuilt pretty quickly. Several homes were severely damaged. I think upwards of 30 homes had some damage. And they just rebuilt very quickly and went along. But the city definitely took notice and thought, we should understand this situation better than we do right now. And it took a while to come out, but a study by an avalanche specialist named Keith Hart came out in 1967. And for some reason, it was confidential at first. The Assembly Planning Commission didn't get their hands on it until the following year, 1968. But what Hart found was that the avalanche path was capable of such large avalanches that the neighborhood could not be protected from worst case avalanches. But he did think it might be worthwhile to build some structural protection. And he had this scheme to design to build these big mounds uphill of the neighborhood. And these mounds were supposed to deflect and dissipate slides. And his word was he thought that this could make the risk tolerable for the neighborhood.
I'm picturing like a ski jump.
Now, in the very first meeting, when the Planning Commission sees the report, somebody comments, these mounds look expensive. And it's good that the mounds were not built, because the most recent study, which was using much more advanced modeling, came out in 2011. It was done by a Swiss institute. And it said that Keith Hart's mounds were far too small. So that study looked at several structural possibilities, not just his. And it rejected all of them as not protective enough against really big slides. So that study found that the only really practical way to mitigate the risk was to buy people out of their homes, essentially just to get rid of the neighborhood altogether.
That's a big ask. And I know that recommendation was made before that. It's pretty pointed in that 2011 study. So what happened when the city kind of started to explore that idea of a buyout program?
Well, it didn't really go anywhere. They did hold a meeting. There was public participation. People asked questions about it. But when I spoke to State Senator Jesse Keel, who was on the Assembly at the time, what he remembered was that they didn't ask staff to put any time into investigating it, that the problems around it just seemed too daunting and there wasn't enough interest.
I guess the one big change that came out of that 2011 study, I think a lot of people, at least here in Juneau, know that we have an urban avalanche forecaster now, and they're watching the risk in the same way that they sort of report on backcountry conditions, they report on the avalanche conditions above the Barron's neighborhood. Is that the biggest thing they've done?
I think that is the biggest thing that they've done for people who already live in the neighborhood, or people who might buy in the neighborhood in the future, because they face the same risks they always face. Their homes face the same risk they always faced. But because of these daily avalanche forecasts, there's a much better chance that people won't be in their homes if a worst case slide does happen. And my understanding is that the evacuation advisory in February was pretty successful, and the effort of going door to door and opening up an evacuation center kind of communicated the seriousness, and it seems like people mostly complied. But avalanche forecasts aren't perfect, and there's no guarantee that one won't happen when there is no evacuation order. So, but this is a huge improvement over 1962, when people woke up to the avalanche and had no idea what was happening. But the other thing that's been done, a lot has been done to prevent more development in avalanche paths. The code has changed so that people can't expand their homes, add bedrooms, build mother-in-law apartments if they live in a severe avalanche zone. And the city also put a lot of effort into acquiring unbuilt lots, or starting in the 70s, I believe, maybe the 80s. And they did acquire a number of lots, either by buying them at reduced prices or convincing people to donate them. So a lot of land is now being maintained as open space that will never be built on, which might have been built on otherwise.
So it's not, the homes there are not going to expand.
Right.
Anytime soon. But the houses that are there are there.
The houses that are there are there. And because there is no buyout program, if you want to leave the neighborhood, you need to find someone willing to buy your home and move into it. I think one of the most interesting things to me is also something that's hard to really unravel based on the sources I was able to find, which is how people understood the avalanche risk. There's a lot of talk about the transverse gully that's a good ways up the face. It's a diagonal feature, and it does funnel smaller avalanches off to the side. And we know from a letter written right after the 62 avalanche that people who live there put a lot of faith in that gully. And the subsequent avalanche modeling puts very little faith in that gully. They say it only helps against small avalanches. But I think when we talk about whether or not people knew the risks when they moved in, whether they know the risks now, I wonder how much we really know about people, about how people understand the risks of where they live there.
Yeah, and I mean, you have some experience in this. You worked with the Alaska Earthquake Center before. So what's your sort of understanding of, like, I mean, we know how people perceive risk in general, right? I mean, is that something that we can sort of make generalizations about?
Well, you know, there is a parallel here, which is back when I worked at the Earthquake Center, one of the most difficult misconceptions we had to deal with was that, you know, it's a cliche that Alaska is a land of extremes, but Alaska really does have natural hazards that most places just don't face, and experiences really events of great magnitude. And because we've had things like a magnitude 9 earthquake, which very few places have ever experienced, it kind of inures people to risk and makes them cavalier, and it makes them hard to take lower magnitude events as seriously. So it's true that one of these huge 1890 style slides could level the neighborhood completely. That doesn't mean that a 1962 slide, you know, tearing the roof off your home is nothing, because your insurance isn't going to cover it as wind damage anymore.
Well, thank you for all of your research. I really appreciate the time that you've taken to sort of dig into this.
Thanks. It's fascinating, and I do plan to keep learning more about it.